This podcast is part of the Frederick Podcast Network. Learn more at listenfrederick.com.
Beers in the Lot is partnered with the Hockey Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to Beers in the Lot. Before we get going, let me just remind you about our shop at beersinthelot.com/shop. That's where you can get the t-shirts and other merchandise with Beers in the Lot logos on it. Also, check out beersinthelot.com for anything else you might be curious about this podcast. And be sure to join the Discord at beersinthelot.com/discord.
So for episode 186, our special guest is Robert Greeley. He's a digital storyteller, and he gave us lots of good stories for this episode. So let's get to it and crack the beers.
You guys waiting on me every time?
Yep. We're used to it by now, dude.
I like to think just because mine sounds so good.
It normally comes through pretty well.
It's the new studio office there, Danny. Yeah.
I just started hanging stuff up in here, so it's still loud. The noise just ricochets off the walls.
You're way ahead of me, dude. I've been here a year plus. I've only hung two things.
Danny, what are you drinking tonight, Daniel?
Okay.
Yeah. Amateur hour tonight. All right. Yeah. What you drinking here tonight, Daniel?
Well, per usual, I have a Treehouse. Bomb Cyclone. Definitely a mix of a bunch of different stuff that I wouldn't normally try, but we're giving it a shot tonight. What do you got tonight, Aaron? Looks like you have a unique beer tonight.
I have something that I normally wouldn't try as well. This is a Fatheads Brewery Juiced to Jupiter Tangerine India Pale Ale. Courtesy of you, Daniel. Thank you for this.
Oh, yes.
Appreciate it. And honestly, after first drink, it's pretty good. I'm happy I tried it. What you got, John?
I have some Bullet Bourbon this evening, actually. So back weeks on the bourbon trail. Eric, what do you have this evening, sir?
I have the new house beer, Three Floyds Zombie Dust.
Oh, yeah. Excellent choice.
Yeah,
what changed?
Well, Flying Dog left town, so no more
Sayonara.
Yeah. So long. So we're on the Three Floyds bus now. Zombie
it's a good
dust.
One. It's a good
yeah.
house. Right
Zombie on. Dust right is on. Excellent. Excellent. And we have a special guest for this episode, Robert Greeley, who is a digital storyteller. You may have seen his posts on Instagram, TikTok. He has a really awesome YouTube channel where he travels globally, mostly to Europe, but globally, right? That counts, international, to see some of the lesser known pro leagues and tell their stories, the players and the teams and the atmospheres and goings on. And then also there's some North American stuff on there too. I was watching some of the workouts. There was like a workout battle between some college hockey players I saw. There was, you know, some other North American pro players, you know, getting ready for seasons and such. So really interesting stuff on there. Welcome, Robert.
Hey, thanks for having me. I will say, though, a little insulted that you invited a Newfoundlander on here and not one of you has a Newfoundland brand beer. What are you doing?
It's hard to get.
We were hoping you bring some like Newfie Screech. Why don't you bring any of that?
That's well, here's the real for. Secret about Newfie Screech is that Newfies don't really drink it. We just love seeing you suffer when you come to the island.
Yeah. Right?
That's all it is. But yeah, no, it's been interesting actually being a Newfoundlander, and obviously, you know, drinking has been in our culture for, you know, so long. And it's something that, you know, I was obviously introduced to an age that I won't incriminate myself by repeating, but you know, over the last, 14 months now, I guess, like I've just been, sober, not drinking or doing anything of that nature. So it's been really interesting over the past year to kind of see, you know, life from this lens of it all. I still, you know, like I said, it is a part of our culture. So I'm not, I still love being around it. I still love talking about it, but yeah, right now I've just kind of stopped and it's been interesting.
No, that's great.
Right on. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good to hear. Actually.
I've had a couple of our guys do the, like the Sober October thing, and they said they feel great throughout the month.
Yeah. John and I have been doing that the last couple of years. It's definitely good to, you know, that's a minimal thing, right? 30 days is nothing. But it's a good reset, right? So,
well, the thing for me is it was kind of honestly a little bit of an accident. So I was in Romania with my buddies over there who were playing in Brazov, right? And they just had a bug going through the team, and I kind of caught the tail end of it. So I was sick during New Year's. So obviously I just didn't drink. New Year's, returned home to Canada. And then like 4 months went by, and a lot of this content stuff too, you are kind of, you know, just tunnel vision by yourself. And, you know, 4 months went by and it was kind of like, I haven't had a drink in, you know, since like December 30th or whatever it was kind of thing. I was like, you know what, let me run through the year and see how this kind of goes. And, you know, there were a few moments where, you know, in Germany 4, I was there and the guys had won their game and, you know, they were kind of insulted with me. They're like, water, you're drinking water? Like, you're not having a beer after a big win. You know, there were a couple of moments like that where it's like, oh, you know what, it would be nice to kind of, you know, have one there. But, you know, I was like, okay, you know, I told myself 12 months, let's stick it out. And January 1st hit, and it was kind of like, okay, you know what, let's keep it going and see. There's some times where I'm like, oh, you know what, it would be nice, because I look back at like the moments that I think that if they happen now that I would kind of crack, right? So when I was in the Czech league, right, like we're in Pilsen with my buddy, you know, when we're out with his parents, it's Christmas time, and like we're having Pilsen beer in Pilsen, right? When I was with one of my best friends who's actually, he's South American, he's from Uruguay originally, but we all went to Argentina together, and like we were having like the red wines with the, you know, they've got a fantastic meat selection down there, which, you know, beer coming out of the mouth. But to have to have the red wine down there and stuff like that. And then I didn't get an opportunity. I did think that this was going to break me in August when Ben Hutton, a buddy of mine who I've gotten to know through some of those workout videos that we've done, he was on the Vegas team that won. And I went up and I helped kind of document some extra stuff with his Stanley Cup. And that was in August. And I was like, have an internal conversation with myself. I'm like, if he puts a beer in the Stanley Cup and says, Rob, drink it. Like, I mean, I think I got it. Yeah. But obviously what we were doing was just, I was just out with him at the community event. So there was, you know, it was too much of a park and friendly kind of day. Right. So we didn't get the opportunity, but I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe I think that might've broke me, but yeah, so we'll see. I'm not too sure. I'm not in a rush to get back into it now at this point. Cause now I look at it too, as, you know, like I was saying, Newfoundlanders, we are big drinkers, and you know, a night out is easily like a couple $100 for us, like without blinking an eye. And I'm just like, you know, there's been times in Europe where I'm like looking at the bank account and I'm like, okay, what random part in the world am I stranded in two right now? And it's like, geez, you know what? A couple $100 could get me out of a pickle.
So you already mentioned a couple of times, you know, when you go on your travels, you're basically hooking up with friends, and then that's what's generating, you know, the content and the content ideas for you and everything. So are those players that you played with when you were growing up? Are they classmates? Like how do you develop these friendships, you know, through your life and career?
First off, I'm flattered you think I was ever skilled enough to play with half of these guys. No, so I mean, the thing is, this all kind of started, like I was in third grade. I told my teacher I wanted to be an author, right? She was like, it's not a real job. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to show you, primary school teacher. So I just kind of stuck at it. And, you know, obviously as time has evolved, I think, you know, an author, a storyteller, it's now formed into this digital format, right? And so,
right.
You know, that kind of quickly turned into me wanting to host TV shows and everything like that, right? So I was doing that during high school when obviously I was still allowed to play sport at a competitive level. They, you know, everybody makes the high school hockey team in rural Newfoundland, right? So it wasn't like, oh, no, you actually are terrible. You're cut, right? But no, come on, we need the bodies, right? So simultaneously going through both of those things. And then at some point it just kind of got there where it was like, okay, let's kind of take this a little bit more seriously. you know, did the hosting gigs, got in front of the camera a lot. In Newfoundland, we have this thing where it's like career education. I forget the actual name of it, but there's like volunteer hours. And so I had already expressed interest that I wanted to do this. I was already starting to write like newspaper stories on the local athletes and the paper in my hometown. So my career education teacher, she just said to me, she's like, hey, Eastlink TV, which is like a, they're pretty big in Atlantic Canada, but they have like expanded and they stretch out throughout the whole country. They are coming to Clarenville to do the Senior Hockey League show. So senior hockey is pretty big in Newfoundland for context. I mean, if any of you guys are like Penguins fans, which I kind of see, like Aaron Asham even ended up in that league at some point, right?
Right.
Terry Ryan, obviously pretty most notable there, has played in it too. And that's where I first met Terry. And, you know, we've been kind of close ever since, however you want to call it. We're always kind of checking in every now and then. And I'm sure we'll get to him. I mean, Terry's great. I can't say enough good things about him, but I'm getting ahead of myself because so they were coming to Clarenville to start putting off that show. My teacher was like, hey, they've emailed the school. They're looking for student volunteers to pack and unload gear. I was like, She's like, yeah, I know, like you're writing. Like, I know you're interested in this stuff. And I was like, yeah, 100%. And I got there. Brian Daw, who was the producer at Eastlink at the time, he looked at me and he was like, what do you want to do with your life? And I was like, I want to be in front of the camera. He's like, okay. I never lifted a box for them. I still feel bad to this day. I was supposed to do heavy lifting. Brian's like, no, okay, that's what you want to do. Put me right in front of the camera. I got to host that show. That's where I got to meet, you know, guys like Terry Ryan and just really get the reps in early. And also to add a little bit of credibility, you know, I can still say to this point that like, yeah, I've hosted TV shows and people, their eyebrows always perk up. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, listen, I was not Good Morning America, but you know, I had a good time with my, you know, 40 or 50 viewers on local cable TV kind of thing. So the ball started rolling from there. And then again, spending as much time at this as I was, the grades definitely probably slipped a little bit more than what they should have. So I applied to, and funny enough, through that opportunity, I was lucky enough to meet Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole because they were initially my hometown won Craft Hockeyville like way back in the day. And they came, they loved it. And then in 2014, which was a year before I was supposed to graduate high school, we were hosting the Newfoundland and Labrador Winter Games. And so the organization committee, they reached back out to Jay and Dan and they're like, hey, are you guys interested in coming out for the closing ceremonies? They had such a great time beforehand. They did again. They came on one of the shows with Eastlink that I was volunteering with because I was doing color commentary at those games. And basically from there, Jay, his wife, and Dan came to the arena to just kind of take in some of the hockey. I was there doing notes for the medal games the next day. It was just the semifinals. Jay recognized me from the morning. He was like, hey, like, if you have that clip from our show like that we filmed this morning, we'd love to have it. I was like, yeah, I'll get in contact with you. And then he just kind of invited me to sit down with him and enjoy the game. So I basically got like, you know, 3 hours of their ears to just ask questions and take everything in. And they recently switched their name, but they're now the Toronto Metropolitan University in Toronto. And so that was Jay's school. They're pretty famously known for their sport media program. I mean, if you actually kind of look at like a lot of the TSM reporters, the Bar Down crew, like all of like pretty predominant say hockey influences in Canada, a lot of them are TMU graduates. And so I was just like, yeah, you know what, this is the school for me, this is the dream school. But again, too, just growing up in Newfoundland, you don't know a whole lot about the different opportunities. So that was really the only spot that I applied to. I got waitlisted, and so then I was kind of like, let me figure out what to do here. Now found a college in my hometown that year, gave me the opportunity to just kind of strengthen my resume. Was able to get a little bit more into social media there now, like helping out with our local minor hockey organization. Reapplied to Ryerson, they're like, no, we still don't want you. But the University of Ottawa was, you know, gracious enough to, you know, send me a letter of, you know, I was accepted. They gave me 3 credits actually for the year of college or that I did, which was kind of funny. So I looked at all my options and that was, you know, it was, again, TMU, U Ottawa, Carleton, and I also applied to St. Thomas. So St. Thomas accepted me. They're a school on the east coast of Canada. U Ottawa, obviously, like I said, accepted me with the three credits. TMU was like, no, not happening. Carleton, and it's funny, so U Ottawa and Carleton are massive rivals, right? Like, that's kind of the big one here in Ottawa. And I almost feel like this is where it all started for my personal rivalry with Carleton, because they're like, yeah, no, so we're actually not going to accept your college transcript, and we're just going to go by your high school thing. And yeah, obviously, you're not getting in because those high school grades were shit. That's why you went to the college. And we're not going to refund you the $50 admission application fee. So St. Thomas U Ottawa is kind of what it came down to. And I was like, okay, you know what? I want to get into a little bit of a bigger market. Like, I, you know, I'm an Atlantic Canadian. I'm a Newfoundlander. Like, I feel like I've gotten a grasp of it, and went there, and honestly, it was the time of my life. I mean, those guys that, you know, I got to work with and everything like that are, you know, they're brothers at this point too. I mainly worked with our football team, but because of my hockey background, I was still pretty well acquainted with the men's hockey team there. And that's kind of where, I mean, I also got involved with like the Ottawa Red Blacks, and because of that, Ottawa Sport and Entertainment Group is owned also, like, it's Red Black 67s, like, that's kind of the umbrella there. Honestly, I was just there at a really good time. Like, Packer Metro, the head coach, and still is the head coach at U Ottawa, did a really good job at recruiting that group. So there's 17 graduating guys, right, that all pretty much went on to have, like, at least, like, a couple seasons of pro, depending on the level, right? And even the guys that he recruited in later after that 17 graduating class, like Mongo, who's, you know, tearing it up in the coast right now still. And so Mongo, yeah, Mongo's doing fantastic. And Nick, who I also mentioned, which is an episode that's coming out in April, I spent a week with him over in Straubing. I mean, he's first year in his in the Dell League, and he's leading the team as a defenseman in points, right? So
sick, yeah.
On the U Ottawa side, like, they just all had such a great core where, like, those guys went on to, you know, keep playing. And then the Ottawa 67s team, I mean, Marco Rossi, top 10 draft pick, Jack Quinn, top 10 draft pick. Evan Ball, regular with the New Jersey Devils. Graham Clark, second-round draft pick for the Devils, got up finally this year and is still in that organization. Noel Hoffmeyer's got his pro deal with Edmonton, is a regular on Bakersfield right now. Ty Felliber is in the AHL with Nashville. Sasha Chmielewski, you know, he was representing America at the World Juniors, but he's a KHL All-Star over in Russia. You've also got Mikey DiPietro, who's now found a new home in Providence with the AHL team. And I still feel like, even though I almost went down through everybody, Matt Maggio as well, too, who was leading the OHL after he got traded to Windsor. Like, he's turning it up with the Islanders. Like, it was just a really, really good team, right? And so even a lot of those guys, a few of them are also playing in Europe, and, you know, I just kind of got the opportunity to catch up with. So that's more or less awesome. The long-winded story of how all of it kind of got set up, right? I got introduced to those guys through that. And then, funny enough, when I was filming that stuff, because these are all pre-recorded, like, there wasn't really much of a plan too much now. Like, even, like, operationally, things have changed drastically for myself over the last few months, right? And now things are, you know, being taken a lot more seriously.
Nice. Well, we usually have no plan, so we can relate. We just get on open beers and wing it usually.
I mean, I'm a fan of that too, honestly, though. Like, I do think there is something to say about just, you know, the over planning and everything like that. At the end of the day, for me, the only reason why I'm looking at it is because now I'm just recognizing, like, okay, let's do these few things to, A, give me less of a headache. Also, so I can offload some of the work with, like, you know, taking on editors. And so they don't, the reason me and Braden were kind of going back and forth, who, you know, is the guy from St. John's that I've had helping me out with a few episodes now. And I opened up, like, the files from my time in Strasbourg in France too. And I'm like, dude, don't worry about it. I got this one, because I don't even know what in the world this is right now, right? So that's kind of the process, because for me, it's easy, right? I was there, I experienced it. I'm like, yeah, I know these things. But when you hand it off to somebody else and they're just looking at it, they're like, what is this, right? So that's kind of why, to get a little bit more strategic with that and really utilize his time as well too, because he's really talented with just the video editing and that aspect of it too, right? So, like, obviously, like, what would I rather have him do? Sift through my footage and bullshit for 3 hours, or an actual like planned, like, okay, here's our, here's the hunter clips that it is. This is kind of the framework of the story. Go to town, really edit this and spend 3 hours just purely editing what he is so good at. Right. And yeah. I mean, I think it's a no brainer.
I know the one thing that always like is kind of a common theme in a lot of your videos, whether it is some of the, you know, like beef broth in Scotland and stuff and some of the import rules in the Elite League and all the other leagues, you really kind of tie in somewhere in the video the life experience of just hockey overseas or hockey in that specific market for that team. So is that something that you've always kind of thought of as kind of a storyteller, or even when you were younger wanting to be, you know, kind of a forward-facing sports journalist, or is that something you've just developed over time?
I've always kind of stayed true to just the point that like everybody has a story, like everything is very much warranted in telling. And like one of the things that drives me insane, and I don't know if I would have taken hockey a little bit more seriously, but it was like, yeah, NHL or bust. Like that's all I heard as a kid, right? And it's like, okay, well, like I'm obviously not going to make it to the NHL, so, you know, let's just have some fun and, you know, try not to get too hurt by the time I got to go to university, right? But it's like, hold on a second. You can pretty much get your education paid for, right? Like you can go play in a lower league in Europe and get to travel, you know, those parts of the world. And, you know, basically, you know, you're not going to leave the season with a ton of money. You might have a couple extra euros. You might just break even, but you literally got to live in a whole different country for free. And I mean, the other thing too, is especially with like, you know, social media and the opportunities there, you're also seeing a lot of different athletes be able to create a whole other revenue stream for them with their, you know, marketing themselves throughout the time and showcasing their experience as well too. Right. So I think that's kind of like where that all comes from, is that, you know, like all these things are like important to tell and like are unique to tell. And it's not, you don't have to be playing at the highest level to look back at your hockey career and say it's a success. I mean, I didn't accomplish anything in the sport as an athlete. I mean, a couple Newfoundland medals, you know, some good stories and everything like that from like the performance side of it. I look at my hockey career as a huge success because, I mean, again, like never was I the best athlete, but sport in and of itself, because of what it inspired me to do, has taken me to over 20 countries. It's gotten me to a point where, like, I still think it's crazy that anybody comes up to me and wants to talk to me about my job and what I do and, you know, the messages that I get and people wanting to even chat and pick my brain, right? Like, that doesn't happen without sport. And the other thing, too, is, like, that is just such a privilege that what I do for a job is something that, you know, people can kind of take time out of their day, get inspired, have entertainment, like whatever it may be, whatever they're watching the video, find enjoyment in it, and then keep watching. And even when they see me in public, just kind of, again, chat with me about, you know, what I've been doing, or, you know, ask for a photo. And like, I don't think that's ever anything I'm going to take for granted. And if I do, I mean, I've completely lost myself in the whole process, right? Because that is special. Because I mean, there are far more people doing far more important things in this world than what I'm doing. And nobody's ever going to know who their names are, or they're never going to have somebody stop them while they're going to the gym and say, hey, love what you were doing here. Like, where are you going next? What, you should do this and that. Right. And so it's just such a privilege. And yeah, it's still tough to really actually put into words when I like sit down and kind of reflect on it.
I love the aspect of it's not 100% NHL or bust, because, you know, like I coach, right? And so I deal with kids that are looking at what they want to do after they graduate high school now, right? And, you know, it's not always like, oh, you got to go play juniors, or you have to go play in college and you have to do all these things. You could just finish out your minor hockey career and then, you know, go play club college somewhere or some lower level juniors, and then maybe get an opportunity to go play in another country, like, who, like you said, is going to pay for you to live there, pay for you to go to school, et cetera, right? It's like there are so many opportunities for that. And I think like the videos that at least the numerous videos that I watched, like it was very evident that like that's a highlight of your content. And I love that stuff because I think I'm actually going to use that with some of the kids. I actually have a personal story tied to that I think I've told here, so I won't go through the whole thing, but our family took a trip to Australia. We got to see the pro league over there, one game, which was awesome. After the game, the owner of the club invited everybody out to the sponsor pub, which is, you know, that's typical in the club sport model, right? So we all go, and the players were kind of off in their own area. So my wife is like, you know, we have two, like my son was like 10 at the time, and his good buddy that, you know, we have family friends over there. So his good buddy's like 8, 9, or 10 at the same time. She's like, screw this. I'm going to go get some players to talk to the kids. So she goes over to the players area, happens to bring the 4 North Americans that are on the team over, right? And there's one Western Canadian kid comes over, starts talking to the kids, and he's like, look, I'm here because they're paying for me to finish my undergrad, and I have an offer to go to Belgium in the fall, and they're going to pay for my graduate school, and I could live in Belgium for two or three years or whatever it was going to be. And I looked at my son and I was like, are you listening to this? Like, this is what you could do. It's not just, you know, play North American pro somewhere and try and make it. It's, you know, all these other opportunities. So I love hearing about that stuff.
Since 1917, only 8,000 people have ever played in the NHL. 8,000 people have one game played or more in the NHL since 1917. Yeah, it's not the NHL or bust.
No, I think it might not do anything for the kids, but maybe the parents. When I went to U Ottawa, my buddy, we were there the same time. He's a fellow Newfoundlander, but I met him there, right? And show the parents the difference between, hey, these are two guys that went to the same school at the same time. Here's student one's student loans. Here's student B's student loans. And the only difference is one got the athletic scholarship and the other one didn't. So It's like I said, right? Like it opens up a lot of doors. And yeah, I think realistically, it's like any time that you get to do this, it's like, you know, why not? Because I know too, like, you know, we're talking like a younger model right now, but even, you know, seeing some of the guys battle it out in the coast, right? And I'm not really here to debate whether or not you should, you know, stay in the coast or go play in Europe. But one of the things that I constantly hear after, because the coast isn't easy. Like, you're talking like 3-3s on the weekend, like brutal travel schedules. You're playing that super heavy 80 games, whatever their actual schedule allots for them in the season. And a lot of times, smaller ice, like it's physical hockey, like you're beating yourself up, right? I will say I've heard time and time again, it's like, and like I'm finally loving the game again. My body feels great. Like I can go through a full game and, you know, just not be absolutely ruined by the end of it and need like 2 or 3 days off that you don't get, kind of thing, right? So like I said, you know, each individual player, they just kind of got to look at where they're at in their career. And like I said, I'm not here to debate should you stay in the ECHL or should you, you know, go over to Europe. People have their own inner circle for that. But you know, if you put it in front of them too, it's like, okay, hey, you got 2 more seasons in the coast or you got 6 more over summer in Europe, because the schedule's not as intense. You got the bigger ice surface, right? You're not playing as many games, like that kind of that format, right? I mean, and again, too, maybe you leave and, you know, it's one less busted ankle that, you know, is going to creak every time you walk up the stairs when you're in your 40s and your 50s kind of thing, right? So, yeah. You know, it's something that, again, too, I think the more education that's out there with what these opportunities could look like is always good. That's one of the things that, you know, when I am chatting with these organizations, I'm like, hey, like FYI, like a secret added benefit to this is if an import player in North America is watching, thinking about joining your program, they can actually kind of get a sense of like, okay, this is what the facility looks like a little bit. This is what the fan base is. This is what the life's like. Yeah. Okay. Because, you know, a caveat to the kind of going over into Europe is some guys go in blind and it's like, holy yeah. smokes, this isn't for me. You know, it's nothing against the country, nothing against the organization, but it's like they can't physically, you know, do it, right? And, you know, who knows, maybe if they had a bigger sense of what it actually could be like, you're just making more informed decisions, right?
Yeah, that's always a common story, right, for guys that are going over the first time. I know, like, the first year of the podcast, we had Ryan Minkoff on, who is a pro player agent. He does a lot of work with guys that go over to Europe and play for clubs over there. And his story was basically, you know, he played high level college club in the States, ended up in Finland in one of the lower Finnish leagues. And, you know, it was a nightmare because he basically had to learn how to be his own agent and advocate over there and figure everything out. He was in a very small town. He wasn't used to it. It was kind of not the best experience for him. And, you know, he wrote a book about it. And but then he became an agent. You know, one of his good friends that he made while playing over there was good enough to continue playing and move up in levels in the European leagues. And he basically became his agent and started his career that way. And I think like that story is, again, it's very common that, you know, nobody knows really what's going on and what, you know, what is the lifestyle like? What changes potentially do you have to make or not make? Or maybe it's going to suit you better to go over there. You know, they're unknowns. And it's again, because the North American attitude is if you're not playing, you know, NHL or you don't have a chance to play NHL, then like you're nothing. Right. And I think that's a shame.
Well, I mean, this is the next video that's coming out in Strasbourg, and I've been cutting through that. Right. And it's literally like, it's little things too, that you don't really think about. And mind you, when I tell this story here now, like it is such a harmless interaction. It's just funny to look at and just show you some of the friction of like playing in a spot where you don't speak the language, right? Like my buddy over there, he doesn't speak French, right? So he's looking at his equipment manager and his feet are killing him. And he's just like, hey, Bert, have my new skates gotten in yet? And he's like, you want to order skates? And he's like, no, the ones that we've ordered, are they in yet? And he looks at his roommate who sat next to him, and he's just like, basically in French, he says, what's this guy saying to me? And then his roommate looks at him. He's like, Cody, what do you want? And he's like, my skates, are they in yet? Like the wide ones, like my feet are killing me. And it's so harmless, right? But like, again, like that's just something that like you're not really going to think about. And you know what? Like I said, it's harmless. Like everybody's laughing in the clip. And,
right.
You know, I had Cody mic'd up for that interaction, and we were talking about it after about how funny it is, right? And just some of the hiccups. But man, you're having a bad day, and like, you know, you're just like, rain was hitting you wrong. You woke up the wrong side of the bed, whatever. It's just like, you know, that's something that's just like, you know, you just, at the end of the day, maybe you just want to get the point across or you get frustrated, right? But again, right. It's something that you can easily laugh at. But yeah, it's something that, you know, just, if you take it into consideration before you go, when it happens, you're not that frustrated. Right.
Yeah.
And again, too, it's knowing these things. Right. So yeah, it's so small and it's so funny. And the equipment manager there is awesome, by the way, he's such a good dude. And the guys all love him, and they have a little conspiracy. They're like, you know what? I think Bert actually is very fluent in English. He just chooses to.
He does it to mess with him.
Yeah, if he doesn't have the answer right away, he goes what parler le français s'il vous plaît. But no, like I said, it's all good and it's all laugh, right? But it is little things like that to just think of too, right? Because that was a practice, right? Think about, you know, in a game too, right? Like you want the quick communication or anything like that, right? So it's all different elements. And I'm not saying that, you know, obviously you're in France. Like, I'm not saying the whole staff should be just like fluent in English for you, but if you're making a decision as a Canadian who speaks French, it's like, hey, that's an element. Like, if I go to France, I can be in my element a little bit. I can have those conversations and the dialogue quickly, right? So it's just things to think about.
Do you think just dealing with some of the, you know, Canadians or Americans that go over there to play, do you think that's for them in their mind the biggest barrier, the language? Just whether they're in various parts of Europe?
I'll say yes, in the sense that communication is always typically the biggest barrier, not necessarily, say, the language. I think sometimes it's miscommunication on certain things, which tends to be the biggest barrier and the problem, right? Because some of the times, too, it's just like communication of the proper deals and like what you're actually signing up to go there for and like what the agreements are. Because sometimes you get there and it's like, oh, well, hold on a second. All of a sudden there's a fee for this now. Well, you know, that's coming out of my salary. That wasn't discussed beforehand, or, you know, like various bunch of things where it's like, oh, and I'm not saying any of these things happen, but it's like, oh, I have a team car. Wait, no, it's a shared team car. Right. So I think like language. Yeah. But it all kind of comes down to that foundation of like communication. I genuinely think that's probably for imports, maybe the biggest misstep is just fully understanding, you know, kind of all the details and all the little things. And it's hard to get perfect, because the thing is even the organizations and even the players, like, you don't really think about it until it happens. It's like, oh, why didn't we clarify that before I kind of came over here, right? So I think that would tend to be where I would lean towards that answer as being the biggest, like, hurdle for a lot of these guys going over. And yeah, because, again, communication is just so important. It stems to pretty much everything that you're going to be doing.
Time out for just a second while we hear about our sponsors. We'll be right back. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY, that's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. Is it new year, new you for 2024? Pure Hockey has the best hockey equipment, accessories, and apparel on the market to take your game to the next level this year. Maybe you made resolutions to improve your puck handling or passing. Maybe it's time to ditch that old stick and start the year with a fresh twig. Maybe it's time to refresh your NHL wardrobe for the race to the playoffs. Pure Hockey has it all. Whether it's training aids, the latest sticks and skates, or your favorite team's gear, get your hockey shopping done at Pure Hockey and use our affiliate link at beersinthelot.com/purehockey.
One thing I wanted to mention in one of your videos, I don't remember what city it was in Germany, but the arena that was open to the woods at like the back of the arena, I want to play there so bad.
Well, I've seen that twice now. The first one was Crimson Chow, and it's so funny. I don't know how true this is, but it's also in the lockout. It's where Clark MacArthur played and Wayne Simmons, if I'm not correct. So they've been pretty, like, they're pretty popular. It's funny because some of this stuff has taken off recently, and like I get so many people recommending me to go there, and I'm like, guys, like, it's not a good video. It's not my best video, but like 4 years ago, like I was there and I did it. Like, go take a look. Yeah, really unique spot. I don't know how true this is, but apparently, because you can smoke in that building because the half like the wall is open, right? And so that's what, you know, I was told anyway, is that the reasons it's still like that is so people can still just have the cigarettes and smoke during the game. You know what I mean? Like, you literally do, like, you leave that arena. I distinctly remember this so much because it was our last game, right, of that trip. So kind of what did inspire like the later Europe trips was I did have the opportunity to go with the University of Ottawa to Germany. We played 3 preseason games over there. Just the head coach, Pat Grometra, that's like where Crimson Chow was the spot where he kind of ended his pro career too. And so he kind of went back there, and it was kind of like a, you know, a big, for the 17 graduating players, it was like a big kind of like, thank you. And I was lucky enough to tag along and document it all for him with some photos. But we finish up that game, and that's our last game. And it's like, you know, like when you go to somebody's house who is a smoker and you leave and like it's like on your clothes and everything like that.
Yeah.
So that was very much the case for us and like all the gear too. And like literally we went to the locker room, bags got packed, onto the bus, drove to Berlin, whatever, like Munich, whatever main airport we flew out of, flew back to Canada. Bus down from the airport to the University of Ottawa, unpack the gear. So like no time to dry, right? So it's like sweaty hockey gear plus that cigarette smell that just, boy, it really, really hit you after the 8
it's
plus
like
hours.
You spent a night at the Falcons.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh,
it takes me back to when I was learning to play, and it was in this little league in Martinsburg. It was a roller league. I swear to God, the parents would sit over the boards and smoke. Like, while you're like trying to catch your breath, and you just got this big cloud of smoke in your face. It's great.
I have seen some of the videos you do, not recently, but a little while ago. You did like kind of what if moments. One thing you covered, and we talk about this all the time, like not necessarily on here, but like all these like, you know, kind of butterfly effect stuff. You talked about the 2011 Stanley Cup final with Vancouver, and I like how you even mentioned like, oh yeah, and the riot doesn't even happen because they'd win. So yeah, it was just funny you just mentioned that.
Argued yeah. with me on that.
Yeah. No, because the Bruins don't win the cup, which is a big thing. You talk about like how, you know, the Sedins would essentially be engraved and everything. Yeah.
People were saying that, so the riot was happening anyway, right? Kind of thing. But like, they wouldn't have returned to Vancouver if they won the series like that. Like,
yeah, exactly. Right?
I will say I like doing those videos. It is so frustrating. Like the comments though, and just,
oh, I know.
I don't mind being told I'm wrong, but I just want a good point. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't always think I'm right, but when I make those videos, there's rarely a comment where I go, yeah, okay, you know what, that's a good point, and you're right. People are like, nah, it would have been a riot regardless. They would have been too happy. And it's like, nah, like,
no.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
They wouldn't have been back in Vancouver. They would have won it in Boston. Yeah, there definitely would have been like some parties on the streets in Vancouver, but like, it's not getting that rambunctious by no means. I mean, yeah, that's
that guy and the chick would have still kissed.
Oh yeah, the photo. Probably. Yeah. They would have influencers, yeah, no, dude. They were around. Yeah.
So yeah, it's because I don't know. I could go on about just like, I'd love for like good conversation, right? But like, even the, here's 3 things that the NHL could do to, you know, fix their game, like that little hook. And it's like 3 points, right? And it's like, listen, it's funny, actually, the one that got the most heat was the second one where I said like, hey, like in France, like when a penalty happens, like they actually put that penalty up on the scoreboard in the stadium. So like fans right. in the building can understand it. And honestly, I look at that and I'm like, yeah, 100%, we should adopt that. How many times in Toronto, Montreal, you know, Colorado, Arizona, whatever market it may be, that, you know, there's a bunch of people who, A, it's their first ever game, or like, B, you know, they won tickets through work, or somebody said, hey, come to my buddy canceled, come to this with me last second. And if they can like accurately, you know, just go to the game, have a great time. And then like when those little moments happen where they don't understand, because the other thing too is like people also aren't going to be like, hey, like they don't like, some people are shy. They're not, or like social anxiety, whatever it may be. They're not going to be like, hey, what just happened here? Right. Like some people are like, oh, I don't want to be a bother. So, you know, you throw that up on the board. It's like, hey, it's a little thing. Now, if you came back to me and said, oh, you know, it's way too much work on the event staff. It actually accumulates to being like an annual cost for the venue at like $10,000 a year. I'd be like, okay, yeah, cool. I didn't consider that. Writing fucking stupid ideas. I'm sorry, you're not convincing me. Like, give me a break, right? Because I'll tell you too, one of the most genius leagues in terms of marketing, and there's a reason why. If you look at the most, like Forbes is 50 most, what is it, profitable or like largest net worth organizations? All 30 NFL teams are within that top 50. The reason why is because they get it. And one of the big things that the NFL is doing is their Nickelodeon broadcast, where they have SpongeBob and Patrick explaining, having a full broadcast dedicated to literally like explaining the rules. So what I just said there as an example for the NHL and what they could adopt from France is different than that NFL broadcast. However, it still starts the conversation and it's like, okay, the NFL is doing it and investing a large amount of money into it. How come the NHL, which is a sport that, you know, is also confusing to new people and there is different rules and everything like that and offsides, icing, whatever it may be, like, where is that for us right now? And if there is something that I just haven't seen, by all means, show me and let me know. I'd love to read about it. But that's like, let's have the conversation. Let's have the dialogue. Let's go back and forth. Let's like, you know, figure it out, because me making that video gets us to that conversation eventually. Right. And I'm not saying like, you know, the NHL higher ups are watching this being like, yeah, you know what? Robert's got a point here. Let's figure something out.
But we've been saying they should for years. It's okay.
Yeah, we talk about accessibility of the game all the time. And the, like the NHL is a huge culprit in the inaccessibility of the game.
Nobody hates hockey more than the NHL.
Right. We say this all the time. Hockey more than the NHL. They act like whether it's intentional or not, they actively work against growing the game. Despite all their growing the game initiatives, they actively work against it by not doing simple things like, hey, in the arena, require all of the teams to put up that little card on the Jumbotron or the screens or whatever, and explain like, oh, the puck went down to the other end. That's icing. That's why play stopped and the faceoff is down here now. Instead of like you mentioned, like some guy brings, you know, somebody because he has an extra ticket. Usually they explain it incorrectly, first of all, even though they're supposedly the quote unquote more experienced hockey person, right? they'll explain things incorrectly, and then that person is set up for failure from the get-go, and they don't understand what's going on, and it's not good. You're not growing the game. Like
I had something recently with a buddy of mine who I was talking to this past weekend. He said that hockey was one of the funnest games he's went and saw like live, but he didn't know what was going on. He was like, it was so fun, just like up and, you know, up and back action. But like, I couldn't tell you what offsides was. I couldn't tell you what icing was.
Like, we go to a game, at least in the DC area anyway, and lots of places in the States. And you could say with certainty that 80% of the people in that entire arena have never, ever laced up a pair of skates. Like, they have no idea what's going on. And I think that you touched on a really important point there, Robert, is that new fans are born at arenas, not on TV.
Correct.
Like you go to a game and that's where you really experience hockey and you can really feel and see how skilled these players are, and you want to see more of it. So I think you're hitting it nail on the head there with we got to teach people what the game, what's going on. I mean, just basic stuff like that is so important.
There's certain moments within the game that I recognize my fandom for the sport, right? And it's going to the early senior hockey games in Clarenville, right? And trying to get a good view. And that was, you know, a whole other wheelhouse because, you know, those games were just all anarchy, like police escorts for referees in a town of like 6,000 people.
It was
a beast in its own right, that the old senior hockey in Newfoundland. But even too, I remember going into Mile One, St. John's Fog Devils. They were the QMJHL team there at the time. They were only around for 3 years. I remember sticking around after the game a little bit with my parents, and the mascot throws over a puck to me at the end of the game, and I have that, and it's somewhere in the garage now at this point too. But like little things like that, right? It's not the first broadcast I remember is more so, and this is tells you like the magnitude of the moment that it needs to be for me to actually register like the first time of like, you know, watching a hockey broadcast. And that's when the Red Wings beat Pittsburgh in the Stanley Cup final. And Danny Cleary was the first Newfoundlander to ever win a Stanley Cup, right? And that was 2008. So I'm like 11 at the time kind of thing, right? And, you know, that's not 5 years old. That's, you know, 11, like you kind of got some of your interest down pat at that point too, right? And so the reason why that's a memory for me is because I had those early moments in the rink or whatnot, like way back more so, because I think QMJHL story would have been a little bit more recent than the old senior hockey days. But like, that's the thing. And even now, how many games have I watched this year? Like I don't have a TV, I don't have cable, I have DAZN for the NFL season. I've watched zero NHL broadcast this year. The only games that I've seen in full are the ones that I've made time in my schedule to go to. Like I got a layover in Montreal. Canadians are playing the Kraken tonight. Perfect. Like let's go watch it. Like Easter weekend's coming up. I'll be able to see the Kraken and Vancouver play because there was like, I'm very strategic. So Friday, I'll fly to Montreal, the Laval Rocket play. Okay, boom, I get a game in there. I get a video there. And I go back after the game on Friday, basically sleep at the airport, wake up, fly to Vancouver, meet up with my buddy, like one of my best friends who lives out there now. I haven't seen him in 4 years. I'm absolutely stoked for that. But then take him, drive him down to Seattle, catch the Seattle game that night on the Saturday. Then we drive back after that game. On Sunday, Vancouver plays at lunchtime. And then I go to that game, go to the airport, 10 p.m. Sunday, fly back, land back into Montreal Easter Monday at like 10 a.m., which basically allots like all like 3 games, 3 days kind of thing. I don't have to, you know, make any accommodations with anything else that I have. But, and again, too, like that's when I can watch an NHL game. The only time I know that there's a big matchup on in Newfoundland where there's a couple big games going on is because I open up Twitter and I just see screenshots from all the Newfoundlanders that I follow being like of their black, like they're taking pictures of the screen that they're blacked out of the big game and they're wondering why they can't. Service. I get a regional blackout. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, if there was, you know, just an
this is the other thing
we talk about how bad the apps are, and even the NHL's own app, like your own like native app to show highlights, stats, other stuff, schedule. It is the worst app in the history of apps. Like it's terrible. Brutal.
I don't think I've ever downloaded it, which I think kind of says,
yeah, God bless you. You're better off.
Waste your time. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
again, too, it's just like, and the thing is like, you know, we can be, you know, critical or whatnot too. They are doing like some really good things too. And it's just really, you know, finding that like the fine line too of like, okay, what elements can we take from certain things and where can we actually like move forward on this? Like, I mean, the stadium series stuff or the global games that they're doing, like that Sweden thing, like having Toronto heavily involved in that was genius. I think, I can't remember the teams exactly. They have Vancouver over there as well too, right? Detroit.
Vancouver, like, Ottawa, Detroit, and Toronto. And Minnesota? Obviously like Patterson. Yeah, Minnesota went too.
Yeah. So like just teams with like a really good history of like Swedish hockey and everything like that. I mean, I got to go over to Sweden a few months after that. And like Vancouver is still pretty, you know, Vancouver, Toronto, they're still pretty big presences in Sweden, right? So like that was genius. I mean, William Nylander was like, you really do see how big these guys can get basically in terms of like fan reaction and everything like that, because that's a whole other element of this thing too, right? We're talking about the game and like the global superstars, and like it takes a lot to be star in hockey, noticed in any other country than like Canada and the US basically. And like even the US, you know, there's definitely that debate of depending on the market, like you can pretty much walk around your town and be fine, right? Yeah. You even there's a lot that kind of supports this from my viewpoint anyway, that I look at is like, okay, the most top 10 like followed NHL players, right? There's always, and this is more so on the Canadian marketing side, because I will say like the players coming out of like the US, like the NCAA guys, like they're really putting together like some really good social content. And they do seem to be making that investment into like their personal brand. I think Canada, we're still lagging behind a little bit on that. But when you look at like the top 10 most followed NHL players, there, don't get me wrong, there's a couple of exceptions, like Connor McDavid's number two as a Canadian in a Canadian market. But like the rest of the top 10, aside from I think a couple other ones that I'm forgetting, are either Canadians who play in a big American market, right? Or they're Europeans at the top of their game as well too. Like there's a lot of Europeans within that. Like the most followed NHL player is Alex Ovechkin. He doesn't really use Instagram, but he's a top player. He's got the, you know, he's been in Washington forever. He's been a top player in the league, and he's also got like all this like Russian fan base, right? And you also see it with, you know, there's a lot of Swedes in there as well too, right? So it's like a lot of the times too, we really need to look at, okay, how can we elevate personally the personal brand and the faces of our, like, because there's people who don't care about the NBA, but they care about anything that LeBron's going to do, right? Right. So it's
not John,
not me.
I kind of just want to say I like the series that you do with like going to the different games and different buildings and the budgeting of the games, and I just kind of want to know, because my wife and I have always talked about like when we retire, going to see a game in like every building that we can. And do you have anything coming up that you're going to go to, or anything you want to go to?
Yeah, well, it's funny. I actually do have like a running bucket list of just sporting events that I want to get to in the world. And so, mind you, too, like a long-term goal for me is, you know, I recognize like hockey and like the ceiling that it has, right? And where it is right now as a global sport, like there is only so far that I can go. So I do want to turn this stuff into eventually, you know, you build the foundation and it's a sports network, right? So it's, we're going to all different kinds of things around the world and showcasing athletes from whatever sport it may be and anything like that. So there's a lot of like, you know, dream world, like, you know, going to Wimbledon, like the cheese rolling event in England, like doing all kinds of fun stuff like that. So again, like I said, I got to put in my like pay the dues kind of thing with like, you know, just kind of keeping consistent with one sport and building a foundation there and then really strategically again expanding. But in terms of like hockey games, I mean, I'm really trying to work now with, and I got to be careful because some of these things are like still in the works, but it's like, you know, I'm still like, because the other thing too, I like, and to be fair, I should say, because I am one of those that like, if I put it out there, like I do want to make sure that it happens. Right. So it's, you know, anything with the world championships and everything like that. I mean, you know, Spengler Cup is definitely, you know, one on the list that I got to keep an eye out as well too. And then again, too, it's just, it's not so much with the NHL stuff of like, where can we do this? It's just kind of like, how can we do it like bigger and better, right? Like, how can we make it a little bit more fun? And so I don't know when this comes out, but, you know, hopefully all goes according to plan in Vancouver. When we go to the Canucks game, like I'll have my buddy there. He's super keen. I don't think he's actually ever been to a hockey game in his life. Like, he's not by all means like a hockey fan, right? But he's just down to, I mean, I love the guy. Like, he's just always down to just kind of help me. And, you know, I haven't seen him in 4 years. And like, just the once I confirmed that I could come out, like the text of like, okay, what do you need? Like, how can I help? What are we going to do? And he's like, also too, he's great on camera, like in the sense that he just, the reason I say that isn't because he's like, you know, great with the camera. He just has such a lively personality. Mm. And genuinely, like, any one of you guys who walk into the room with him and you immediately be like, yeah, I love this dude. Like, he is unreal. And so hopefully with that added individual, because most of the time I'm by myself when I'm doing these things, especially the ones in the NHL rinks. So we'll do like a one versus like $100 Vancouver Canucks. So I found this great blog post. I wish I could remember who wrote it and give them credit where credit is due, because they went and wrote this great blog post. I will link it once my video comes out, of where like all the concessions and all the prices for every single like avenue that the Canucks have. And so what we're going to do is basically we're going to compete with different challenges, and whoever wins gets to have the expensive item at that specific like venue thing, and whoever loses gets the $1, and then we'll go through the comparisons and basically run through like the whole stadium there. So that's like a whole different element that I haven't been able to do, because I can't really do that by my, I could do that by myself, but I don't want to eat all that be by myself. Like, you do kind of need that second hand. And it just, again, too, like, you know, you're laughing as I'm kind of going down through the process, right? Like, that's, it's a funnier storyline as well, too. Like, yeah, two best friends competing, like, who gets the good food, who gets the crappy food,
right?
Is the crappy food really that bad? Is the, you know, maybe the better food, holy shit, what a ripoff this is, go for the other one, right?
So you already started promoting a little bit, like, go to the YouTube channel, subscribe and sign up, you know, click the bell and the whole thing. So you might as well, you might as well hit everything else. Tell people where to find the videos, where to find you on socials, all that stuff.
I almost don't want to tell them. Only find me on YouTube. Like, genuinely, like, there's like no other platform pays Canadians, right? Like, I don't make money from the TikTok, right? Like,
oh, wow.
Instagram Reels doesn't give me anything. It's so annoying, actually. So can somebody, if anybody's listening to this who has an answer to this, because I cannot wrap my head around how Meta owns Facebook and Instagram. As a Canadian, I'll make money off of the ads on the Reels for Facebook, but not Instagram. Now, here's the thing. I do like well over probably about 1 million views a month on the Reels that I post on Instagram. I probably only get like 200 views on the ones that I post on Facebook. So it's literally, I love it when Meta sends me the invoice being like, you just got paid. And I open up the document and it's like, yeah, 2 cents. Here you go. for a month's work. Yeah, it's, but no, I mean, it's Robert Greeley on pretty much anything. I, you know, there's an extra Y at the end because some guy had the Instagram handle before me.
Is what it is. He's an imposter.
Rob, to kind of close out our question, to close out every guest, is, so kind of where we're at, we have like Sheetz, which is a late night, I mean, it's a gas station, 24 hours, but you can get made to order subs, fried foods of all variations. It's a spectacular establishment. So if it's like late at night where you're at, what's kind of your, like, your go-to late night meal? Like, you're maybe, let's say you got to edit a bunch of stuff. It's late. You're like, I'm starving. I'm going to go here. Get food. What are you getting? What's your meal?
That's so funny. So I'll try, like, literally, like, we're on two right now. Like, so I'm working in like Northern Canada right now. So like, there's three gas stations in this community. Like, it's like minus 40. Like, I don't have a vehicle up here. Like, I get brought to and from the office kind of thing. Like, it's so genuinely nothing right now, which has been great on the budget and everything like that. But yeah, so, there's literally no way for me to, because again, everything like closes at 8 here. There's no like, there's one restaurant, which is like the hotel restaurant. And so, yeah, you really actually can't get anything right now. And even too, like, even when I was in Clarenville, like growing up, like that was a thing too, right? Like, everything we have one gas station now that's open 24 hours, but it's just, it's funny to hear, sorry, and I'm not trying to like go on this whole thing, but it is funny to hear that question. And growing up where I'm from, it's like, that's, it's just wasn't really an option, right? Until later, later in life. But, when I lived in St. John, so like obviously like the capital, so a few more options around, it was more so just to like actually get like a meal. I'm trying to think now, like probably Dairy Queen, like a Blizzard.
Oh, there you go.
Solid.
Nice. Good one. Sweet treats. Yeah.
That was attached to the gas station near my house.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, so maybe that. I will say, like, now that I'm like stuck in the house and got to be a little bit more creative. The other thing too is like where I'm to right now, it's pretty hard to get like groceries up here, right? Like things are a little bit more expensive because there's no like I can only get out of this community by plane, right? Like I can't drive or train, right? Like it's pretty remote. So right now, like the cheapest option for say like milk, like is like 2% milk. And there's other options, but it's kind of like, okay, you can pay $4 for 2%, or you can pay like $8 for like a liter of almond milk kind of thing. And it's like, well, like if I was down south, yeah, sure, I'd drink the $4 almond milk. But like up here, it's like, you know, whatever. And one thing that I found, and it's ridiculous that I'm doing this, but like the 2% milk with Honey Nut Cheerios is way too sweet to like actually make a proper bowl of cereal. So I take two mugs. And I pour one with the 2% milk in one, and then I pour the Honey Nut Cheerios in the other mug, and I just eat the Cheerios dry from the mug, and then I'll drink the milk to wash it down, and that's kind of what's been my late night snack right now, which is a little bit interesting, but.
You gotta make
I feel
dinner,
like
right?
I couldn't have just said that without the full backstory kind of thing, right?
So I agree because you gotta preface it, because I'm sure somebody's just gonna like hear that part and go like, whoa, that cat is weird, dude. Like, just go like, what's going on? I understand, because like,
I mean, to be fair, if they've gotten to this point, they've already made that conclusion. They got a full thesis and a hypothesis to support all.
Yeah, true.
All the pain of, like, me being absolutely nuts. And yeah, that's the thing. It's one of my favorite quotes too. Is, you know, the creative adult is the kid that never died, right? So, I mean, that's still what I'm trying to hold on to. Like, I'm still trying to hold on to the fact of, you know, just being a kid, having fun and everything like that, right? And so, again, too, I think it's, you know, being unapologetically yourself, and it pays in the videos as well, too. And I'm lucky to kind of have that avenue where I can really just have fun and do the things that I'm interested in, right? And try and take advantage of it.
Yeah, man. Awesome.
Yeah, man. Well, Robert, this has been great. Thank you so much for spending the evening with us and talking to us. This is really good stuff. So I'm really, really happy you came on and talked to us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, man. Hey, thank you for coming.
And also, if you go to a Caps or Pens game, just know we are also generous with our credit card whenever we get drunk.
Yeah, if you're done this way. All right, that's it for this one. Thank you for your listen and for your support. We appreciate all of your likes and ratings and reviews and subscriptions on the various podcatchers. Keep them coming. We appreciate every single one of them. I know I speak for the rest of the guys when I say have a good one, and we'll catch you next week when our new episode drops on Wednesday. See ya.